Okay, we're beginning here at 14 lines up on the bottom of Chav Vav Amud Bet. Tanur Banan. Yisrael mal et ovei kuchavim l'shum ger l'afuke l'shum morna delo. So the Breita says that Yisrael can give an ovei kuchavim a brit when he's trying to convert. On the other hand, he can't do it when it is for the interest of morna, which the Mepharshim explain over here is some parasitic worm that gets into the orla, and therefore there's a reason to cut off the orla, irrespective of any religious context. It's for medical reasons that the person would do it. Rashi says over here, the asur lafoto b'chinam, because you can't do it without getting compensated for it. Damran, because the sugya before said, lo malin velo moridin. Here it's you're saving the individual, you're helping them out, so you can't get involved. If you got compensated for it, it might be a different story. But here there's a problem with doing it for free, because then you're providing them a life-saving service, which we don't permit. Baitos Po point out that Rashi notes over here that the restriction against providing that service with Morana is only bechinam when it's done for free. Aval, when it's done bischar, if it's done for wages or for payment, there you're permitted to do it mishum eva. And then the Balei Tosafot bring in the end that veyesh lomar hatam nami bechinam havo, that there are certain instances we are allowed to treat for free. Oleit chakem berufuot yacholiot mutar. In order for you to gain skill or experience, then it might be permitted to you to provide the service for free, because in that way there is compensation. It's not monetary compensation, but the compensation is the experience and the knowledge that you will gain from treating this individual. And therefore it might be permitted, even though it's chinam, because it's not really chinam, there's a purpose to what you are doing that will be beneficial to you later on. And that's why it might be permitted for experimental or knowledge gaining reasons. Mar says, "Vobi kuchavim lo imo Yisrael, meipnei shechashudim ad shvikcha damim divirabi meir." The other hand, an ovi kuchavim cannot give a milah to Yisrael there because of the problem of shvichut damim, the same problem that we've been dealing with all along with Yichud and all the other issues here, that we're afraid that he will do something to cause the child to die. That's the view of Rabbi Meir. Chomim omim ovi kuchavim mal et Yisrael, bizman sheacherim umdim al gabo. So you can't do it if you have people watching over his shoulder to make sure to watch what he's doing. In that case, you can have an Ovei Kochavim do it. On the other hand, if he's alone, then they agree with Rabbi Meir, then you have the same problem of Yichud that you would have in any other situation, which is if you don't check him, he might do something that is to the detriment of the child. Rabbi Meir Omer, Afilo Acharim Omdim Al Gabo Nami. Rabbi Meir says it doesn't matter that there are other people watching him and making sure that he does the right thing, because the Zimdin de Matzile Sakina Umishabile Krot Shivcha. Because sometimes he'll tilt the knife, or he'll cut in such a way that he'll cause the child to lose the ability to procreate, make him impotent from the cut that he makes over here. B'savar Rabbi Meir Ovei Kochavim lo, is it really true that Rabbi Meir believes an Ovei Kochavim cannot perform a brit milah? V'riminu, ir she'ein ba rofei Yisrael, a city which does not have a Jewish doctor in it. Here it's interesting because in the Gemara in Bava Batra, Rashi over there translates rofei many times to mean a mohel, and this similarly seems to be what the Gemara is saying over here. When they're saying there's no rofei Yisrael, it seems to be that there's no mohel. Likely, even if it's speaking about a doctor, the two were correlated in their time, meaning that the doctor performed the mila, there was some connection between them. So you have no Jewish doctor, but you have the options of a rofe kuti and a rofe oved kochavim. Imol oved kochavim, val imol kuti di Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir opts for you to get the mila done by the oved kochavim versus the kuti. And here the Rashi explains the differences because the oved kochavim doesn't normally give a brit mila. And there he has no religious vested interest in what he is doing. So if he comes to give a milah, he'll follow, let's say, the instructions of the Jew. He won't have any ulterior motives in terms of religious context because they don't give milah to the non-Jews. On the other hand, the kuti does have a vested interest because the kuti himself gives milah to his children. As Rashi says over here, Shemal l'shem d'mut yonah shematzu b'rosh har gizim. That he's going to do the milah to shame his avodah zarah on Har Grizim, and so that's actually a negative in his milah. So despite the fact that he's engaged or is interested in giving milah, we don't necessarily trust him because of his motives to do it towards avodah zarah. He says better that the kuti does it and not the oved kochavim. Rabbi Yehuda is koshesh for shvichut damim of the oved kochavim. Therefore, he opts for the kuti. So this seems to be the opposite of Rabbi Meir's position. Over here, Rabbi Meir is giving preference to an Ovid Kochavim over a Kuti, when before Rabbi Meir says you can't let an Ovid Kochavim do it even if somebody's watching over his shoulder. So Epoch flipped their positions in the bright of Rabbi Meir. Omer, Imo Kuti v'lo Ovid Kochavim. So that would accord with Rabbi Meir's position. Now, have the Kuti do it, not the Ovid Kochavim. Yehuda Omer, Ovid Kochavim v'lo Kuti. Now, Gemara says, can you really say that? V'savar Rabbi Yehuda Ovid Kochavim shapir tami. Does Rabbi Yehuda really believe that an Ovid Kochavim can perform a milah? V'atanyo. We have a bright of Rabbi Yehuda Omer, minayin l'milah v'Ovid Kochavim sheep sula. How do you know that Ovid Kochavim that tries to do a milah or does do a milah, that it does not work? Shenemar. V'yomer l'ukim el Abraham, v'atai priti tishmar, ata, v'zaracha charecha l'dorotam. But the ata in the pasuk teaches you that the way that the Rabbeinu Hananel says, he says ata v'lo kuti v'koshkein oveid kochavim. It's you. You means you, the Jews, do it. Rashi, on the other hand, focuses on the latter part of the pasuk, which is that it says ata v'zaracha acharecha, mean that your descendants. Now that does open up the possibility of descendants of Abraham that are not Jewish, but they use the same drashot that we see other places. Ki b'Yitzchak ikarelecha zara. And B, Yitzchak, the local Yitzchak, and they use that to narrow the scope of who can perform a milah, which means that this is a statement or a pasuk that precludes the ability of others to give a brit milah, except for a Jew. So now, if you do that, now you can't flip Rabbi Yehuda's position, because then you'll have a contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda and this braita, and Rabbi Yehuda and the braita we just brought. Elololam, lo tepo. You can't flip them around. We're dealing with an expert doctor over here, as Rashi notes, that he will not risk his reputation. His whole business is built on his reputation because he is a licensed doctor. And in being a licensed doctor, he's not going to risk his license in order to do something like this, to hurt the Jew or to make something of a brit milah. That's why Rabbi Meir, normally who worries about shfichut damim, in this instance would not worry about shfichut damim. And the Balei Tosafot note over here, it's afilu einu mumcheh l'milah. Even he's not an expert when it comes to milah, lo mara nafshe b'chol davar shitasek bo. He doesn't want to take a risk of his reputation. So even though if he messed up a milah, nobody maybe would think anything wrong of it because he's not an expert. He doesn't declare himself to be an expert in this. Nevertheless, his reputation as a doctor as a whole and his professional integrity is dependent on people's assessment of what he does and people's word of mouth. And therefore, he's not going to risk that. And we generally have that, by the way, in halacha, that when it comes to issues where people would risk their professional licenses or reputation, they get a certain amount of nemanut, or we give them a certain amount of leeway because of that. That's used by some, and we'll see later on in the Masechta, and we'll get to that with regards to Chalavakum. So there are other places where we do invoke this type of principle, and the Balei Tosafot are extending it to say that the professional won't risk anything with regards to his reputation. This is Rabbi Yochanan's position that when you have a mumcha de rabim, that you can use them. V'sava Rabbi Yehuda kuti shapir dami. Now you say that Rabbi Yehuda believes that a Ovid Kochavim is not good, but a kuti is good. That implies that Rabbi Yehuda believes that a kuti can perform a milah. V'atanya, Yisrael malat a kuti, v'kuti lo imol Yisrael, v'pnei shemal l'shem hargvizim divi Rabbi Yehuda. Here you have a bright that explicitly says, Rabbi Yehuda says that a Jew can perform a milah for a kuti, but vice versa, it does not work, because the kuti has ulterior motives in doing the milah. V'amar lo, Rabbi Yosef, v'hicheichan matzinu milah min haTorah lishma. He says, where do you ever find in the Torah the requirement that a milah be done, l'shem, shamayim, be done with a particular thought in mind? Elamau, v'olech, ad sh'teitzei nishmato. It's a strange expression over here that Rabbi Yosef uses, but he basically says a kuti can perform a milah, and he can keep giving milah, or he can keep doing this, until he dies. So the Mefarshim over here explained that it is a type of klala, because the kutim were problematic in terms of their worship of Avodah Zarah. So he stooped in a klala to the kuti, because yeah, he can give a milah until he dies. In essence, cursing the kuti while he's speaking about the kuti. But basically, Rabbi Yosef says that you don't require any thought during the time of milah. Milah can be just done. It's a physical mitzvah that is done on the body of the baby. And once it's done, it's done. It doesn't matter what you're thinking when it is done. So if he has ulterior motives, doesn't matter over here. It's not impactful. Now you have a situation in which Rabbi Yehuda says the goy is fine and the kuti is no good. And the Gemara is going to go back and say, Olam, ipoch te'abchino mi'ikara. Let's flip it back like we said before. And that means now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're going to have a situation in which the Ovid Kochavim is kasher, and the Kuti is pasul. The Kuti is pasul because he has the wrong thought. The Ovid Kochavim is fine because he doesn't have the wrong thought. But what about the Lishma aspect? So Rashi explains over here that the people will instruct the individual or the Ovid Kochavim to do it in the proper way. And so with the Jew standing over the back of the Ovid Kochavim, he'll do whatever the Jew tells him to do. Aval Ovid Kochavim lo mahil ela daita d'Israel. Shomaler mahol v'hainu lishma. You can instruct the goy to do the milah, and he does it al dat whatever the Jew's telling him. Since the goy has no vested interest in milah, he only acts as an agent of the Jew. And in acting as agent of the Jew, then the lishma of the Jew, or the instruction of the Jew, is sufficient in terms of lishma. The problem with the Kuti is that he's motivated, self-motivated, which is that he wants to give a milah because he believes you have to have a milah, and he wants to do it the shame his avodah zarah. So he's not going to listen to whatever the Jew is instructing him. He'll do the milah, but he's going to do it on his own terms, not in terms of the Jew that is instructing him. So it actually turned out that the person who knows more is more problematic because he will think on his own and do what he thinks versus the Ovid Kochavim who has no clue what's going on here and he just follows the instructions of the Jew. And that will create the lishma that we need over here. Now, the Bali Tosfot ask over here, Haka mashma, the Rabbi Yehuda afagav d'boi milo lishma, maskini d'makshila b'Ovid Kochavim. Pretty clear here, based on what the Gemara is doing, that even though Rabbi Yehuda requires a lishma, he does allow the Ovid Kochavim, as we just explained. That's how his shita will work, and that's what Rashi just explained. And the Tosfot ask, maishna mi get. Why is that any different than a get? A get also requires lishma, and the disqualification of Ovid Kochavim in writing a get is because he can't perform lishma by the get. And also, we have it by Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah, you also require lishma. How come over there that disqualifies a goy? All you have to do is stand over the goy and tell him to write lishma, and you'll have the same outcome as you have here by milah. The Bai Tosavot have a huge chiddush over here, which is interesting. He says, Ve'esh lomar, dolo domi. These cases are not the same. Dolam Ovid Kochavim stama ko'avid. The goy does it without any thought. He's basically a machine. He's a robot doing whatever is instructed. Gabe milo destama lishma koi. Default situation of milo is that it's lishma. Kol zman she'eino oseh l'shem har gvizim. As long as you don't have an ulterior motive, the assumption of a milo is that it's stam l'shem shamayim, and you're done. Aval get isha stama lav lishma. By a get, it's not stam lishma. This stam isha lav l'girushin omeret. Because a woman is not ready for divorce and not always in the default situation that she's going to get divorced. You must take an active step in order to engage in that. And therefore, you have to explicitly say when you're writing the get, I'm doing it for this particular woman, and I'm doing it for this particular divorce. Who did the Sefer Torah? By Sefer Torah, Tzarich Perush, B'tchilat Kiva, Ani Kotev, L'Shem Torat Yisrael. That I'm writing it for Torat Yisrael, V'az Karot, L'Shem Kedusha. And the Shemot, L'Shem are done for Kedusha. The Stama, Lav, L'Shmo Koy. You say, Sefer Torah is not lishma in its stam form. What I would suggest here is that milah is something that was unique to Jews, and it was something that was only done religiously by the Jews. So the default scenario by Brit Milah is that it's done lishma, because that's the only people who get Brit Milah, and that's the only intent. And so unless you have ulterior motives, that's the assumption that it's stam lishma. The other thing, when it comes to writing, even a Sefer Torah, or even comes writing a get, that's not a uniquely Jewish concept or not a uniquely thing that's done by Jews. And so therefore you can't just say the stam is lishma, because the guy could be writing divorces or bills of divorce for non-Jews as well. He could be writing a Sefer Torah for non-Jews as well, or for reading or for whatever purposes that he's writing it. People do this without being particularly oriented towards the Jews. Now again, that's interesting because it might have changed in society today where everyone gets a Brit Milah. And I would say that before also, Rashi said before that the situation by the Ovid Kochavim is that Shein Darkav Namol Et B'nehem. Ovid Kochavim, whose milah is never the shame of that Kochavim, because they don't normally give a Brit Milah to their child. That's also not true today as well. They do give a Brit Milah to their child, although you could argue that there's a difference. They get it medically, they don't get it but for religious purposes, and still outside the religious realm. I think you could argue it in favor of Rashi that way. But it might change what the Tosfot is saying over here, which is that, can you really say that when someone gives a Brit Milah today, stam it's lishma? Because if doctors give a Brit Milah for medical purposes, then the stam is not necessarily lishma anymore, because it's done for medical purposes. And I think that stam, or what the default that Tosfot speaks about, may not be the case anymore today, versus in their society, where that was uniquely associated and separated Jews out in the fact that they did have a Brit Milah and they didn't have an Orla. So I think that it's an amazing Tosfa because he's mechadesh this idea that Stam Milah is Lishma in order to deal with the problems of why is Novi Kochavim Kasher here as opposed to other places. On the other hand, he does open up the problem that it was something that was associated with Brit Milah being particular to Jews. But then you run into a problem. The Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda. We ran into the problem. The reason we didn't want to flip it before is because Rabbi Yehuda says that an Ovei Kochavim is Psula. And then now you're flipping Rabbi Yehuda's position to make it that the Kuti is problematic because of the Lishma aspect. But that means that he would allow the Ovei Kochavim in that Braita. But we have another Braita that's authored by Rabbi Yehuda that says that he thinks that an Ovei Kochavim is Fasul. So how do you square this? Rabbi Yehuda in one place says a Kuti is problematic. Another place he says an Ovei Kochavim is Fasul. And then we have a Braita, and you can pick which one you want, whether it's a Kuti or an Ovei Kochavim, but one of them, he says, is okay. The way that we flipped it now, he's suggesting that an Ovei Kochavim is okay. Kuti is Pasul. How do you reconcile that? Hi, the Rabbi Yehuda Nasihi. That Rabbi Yehuda wasn't Rabbi Yehuda the Tano, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. It was Rabbi Yehuda Nasihi, the Misadar Mishno, and that's the Rabbi Yehuda over here, the Tanyo. And we have a Braita that backs that up, that the Rabbi Yehuda there could be Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, because we have a Braita that says, Rabbi Yehuda Seomer, Minayin Demila, Ovei Kochavim, Shei Psula. We have Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in that position of saying that an Ovei Kochavim is problematic by Mila, Tamalomar, Batai, Britit Tishmor. Again, this is, Rashi says over here, it comes from Lazaracha Karecha, although the Rabbeinu Chananel says that it's Ata, Velo Kuti, Ata, Velo Ovei Kochavim, and that's the Limud from the Pasuk. And interesting enough, if you just read through the Rabbeinu Chananel, he seems to indicate that the Gemara never flips their positions again. It's missing from his version over here. And he assigns this whole thing to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. But in doing that, he doesn't flip the positions back. Because this, the Ata, then precludes both a Kuti and an Ovei Kochavim. As opposed to, you could have learned that the Ata just eliminates the Ovei Kochavim and not the Kuti. Over here, he uses it, the Rabbeinu Chananel, to eliminate both. And so then he explains, the author of this person that says that Kuti is disqualified, that's Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Because Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's limud is from Ata, and Ata precludes not only a Ovei Kochavim, it also precludes a Kuti. And therefore he assigns the Braita that we brought over here to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And that's how he solves the problem. So he doesn't need to flip the positions. He says Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is the author of this position that says a Kuti is Pasul. If that's how you solve the problem, then that's Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's position. If he doesn't flip it, then what does he do with the Rabbi Yehuda back here who says that a Goy or an Ovei Kochavim is Pasul? You could answer that he thinks both of them are authored by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and then Rabbi Yehuda's position could be either way now because we don't have any evidence as to whether he thinks a Goy or a Kuti is anything. But he, as opposed to what we have in our Gemara, assigns this disqualification of a Kuti to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, which you can then leave Rabbi Yehuda's position intact in the Braita saying that if Kuti is Kasher, Ovei Kochavim is Pasul. But then you still have a steer in the Braita before, and that's why you do have to say that the other Braita is also Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, or as you can see, there's a little Aleph in the Rabbeinu Chananel where he says down below, Tzarechiyun, what to do with the Rabbeinu Chananel's position over here because he doesn't flip the Gemara. Alright, so now, Amar Rav Chista, my time with the Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position? Dichtiv, Lashem, Himo. That you have to do the Mila, Lashem Hashem. That was the question. Where do you find that a Mila needs to be done? Lashem. So the truth is that it's not written here by Din of Mila in Breshit, where it says, Atah Briti Dishmor. Rather, it's written by the Korban of Pesach. In Shmot, by the Korban of Pesach, it says, V'chi Yogorit Chager V'asa Pesach Lashem, Himo Lo Kol Zachar, V'azi Krav L'Soto V'yakez Racharetz V'chol Arel Lo Yochal Bo. So he's reparsing the Pasuk. It says, V'chi Yogorit Chager V'asa Pesach Lashem. That's where the Pasuk reads, Himo Lo Kol Zachar. Then he has to have all the Zacharim have a Mila. So what he does is reparses the pasuk to read V'chi Yogorit Chager V'asa Pesach Lashem Himo Lo. That he has to do the Mila Lashem Hashem. So that's how he gets that there is a requirement of Lishma by Mila. Rabbi Yossi, Himol Himol. That the Pasuk says, Himol Himol Yolid Beit Chal Mechnat Kaspecha Vaita Briti Bibsachem Lebrit Olam. Anybody can perform the Mila, or there's no restrictions on who performs the Mila, because it says, Himol Himol Lachem Kol Zachar. Vida Haktiv Lashem Himol. What does he do with the Lashem in the Pasuk? How about Pesach? He reads and says, you're parsing the Pasuk incorrectly. The Pasuk reads, V'chi Yogorit Chager V'asa Pesach Lashem. So he connects the Lashem to the Pesach. The Pesach needs to be Lishma, But the milah does not need to be nishma. Vidach haminiktev himo imo. What about the himo imo of Rabbi Yossi? What does Rabbi Yehuda do with that? That seems to be a riboy that would include anybody that can do the milah, and they don't require the shema. Dibra Torah k'lashon b'nei Adam. That is just a literary style of the Torah to repeat words. You can't assign or attribute any significance to the duplication of the word. By Tosfot over here asked the question, and many other places in Shas they answer the question. But over here they ask the question, how do you know when it's Dibra Torah k'lashon b'nei Adam? And how do you know when you're supposed to get a limud from it? On top of that, he says we find the same Tanaim in some places saying Dibra Torah k'lashon b'nei Adam, and other places saying there is a significance to the limud. And so the Bali Tosafot say that it isn't something that you can know. It is either, you have to say that it is a Mesorah, and then in different places that there is a necessity for a limud, so they have it. Otherwise, they say Dibra Torah k'lashon b'nei Adam. Or it is that there's some compelling reason that would drive you to say that there is a limud in these situations. There's some deficit in the explanation that requires you then to look at this and say, we need this riboy, or this riboy is significant. And that's what drives the drasha. But it's not something that is consistent. Just because you say Dibra Torah k'lashon b'nei Adam here, does not mean that you will necessarily apply it in other places. Itmar minayin lemilah b'ovid kochavim shi psula. So how do we know that an ovid kochavim is disqualified from giving a milah? Dor bar papa mishmei derav amar v'ata et biti tishmar. Because of the pasuk that we brought before. Rabbi Yochanan, imol, imol. So Rach reads it as, maho, the one who has a brit milah, imol, will be able to give a brit milah. As Rashi reads it as, hamal, imol. But really the word hamal would mean someone who gives a brit milah, mohel. Although Rashi translates the word then mal to mean mi yushum maho. Someone who has a brit milah, imol achirim. He'll have the right to give a brit milah to others. My benayu. What is the nafkamina between these two positions? Aravi maho, v'gabnuni maho. A Arab who has a milah, and you have a gabnuni who has a milah. Gabnuni, it's not clear who that is. Rashi just says, umam mahula. It's a nation, a tribe, a sect that had milah. There is an alternate girsa here. I looked last night and I found there is an alternate girsa here of Uni by the time of Yoshua. The Rabbi claims that that explanation is incorrect because they were geirim and therefore chayav the mitzvot. And the Ritva takes the exact opposite approach and says that they were goyim gemurim because any gibuni that was not mitgayer is considered to be a goy gamur. And so therefore what would be the reason to believe that the gibonim have any distinction as being gibonim? And therefore the Ritva brings that the gabnoni were from the Bnei Keturah, Eshet Avraham, which we know, according to the Rambam, have a unique status where they do have a requirement for milah. And the Oruch brings a similar explanation. They were B'nai Turah, but since they lived up in the mountains, Nigru Gabnunim Lishon Gibain, like a hump of a camel. And you can see that in the Rabbeinu Kanano, he says, B'Gabnuni, Perish Gabnuni, Mi B'nai Abraham Heim, U'mahulim, B'shochnim B'harei Gabnunim, Nefikach Nikraim Gabnunim. They live on the mountains like the humps of the camels. In either case, the situation here is you have people who are getting a milah, so they are mehulim, but they're not Jewish, and they're doing it anyway. So mandamar, imol, imol, ika. The one who says imol, imol is that those individuals will work. Anybody with a brit milah has the right to give a brit milah. That means Jewish, Aravi, Gavnuni, they all have milah. That gives them the right now to give a milah to other people. Mandamar, briti shmor, leka. Because the one who says that briti shmor, that does not work. So that means that even though, according to the Rambam, these individuals are chayav in milah because they're b'nei Keturah, nevertheless, they can't give a brit to a Jew because they're not classified as zaracha acharecha. Although the Ritva deals with the problem in a different way, and this is Shita Rashi as well, which is that when it comes to b'nei Keturah, they were only chayav in milah in that generation alone. Their zarah acharecha did not have a din of milah. It was only the b'nei Keturah themselves, with the children of Abraham, that had a tzivoy of milah. There is a view within the Bayit Tosafot that they were Chayav and Milah until Matan Torah, but that would also obviate the problem because then they wouldn't be qualified to give a Milah. It's only according to the Shita of the Rambam where they are Chayav and Milah and their Zarah Acharehem, their children after them are also Chayav and Milah. There you have the problem as to why they're disqualified from giving Milah. And that's what we said before, that the Zarah Acharecha narrows that down to only people who are Jewish are allowed to give a Milah, despite the fact that B'nai Keturah might be Nitztavu ala Milah, according to the Rambam. Although the Shagadayah gives a different answer and says that B'nai Keturah are only Chayavim in Milah, they're not Chayavim in Priya. And therefore they don't have the same command of Milah as Avram's children or the Avram's descendants that are Jewish. And that's what disqualifies them from being able to give a Brit Milah or not be called Mulim because of the fact that they have Milah without Priya. Is it really true, according to the one who says Imol Imol, that you would allow an Arafi, you would allow the Gabnuni to give a Brit Milah? But it's not. We have a Mishnah in the Darim. Koneim shani ne'eneh min ha'arelim. Person takes a neder to not get hana'ah from anybody who is an arel, an uncircumcised individual. Mutar barele Yisrael vasur b'mulei ovdei kochamim. He's permitted with any Jew, even if a Jew does not have a brit milah, and he's precluded from being involved with any ovdei kochamim, even if they do have a milah. Alma afagav de mehile kaman de lo mehile damu. That despite the fact that they have a milah, we still classify them as arelim. They're called arelim, even if they're not really arelim. And Jews are called mehulim, even though they are arelim. It is a status for the Jew to be called a mahul, irrespective of milah, because the mitzvah of milah is for the Jew. And the goy is an arel, irrespective of whether he has a milah or not, because they don't have the mitzvah of milah. So that the Baalei Tosafot asks basically your question, which is that really true? Because the Darim follow Lashon B'nai Adam. That there is not an indication of what the halachic status of Arel and Milah are, or Mahol are. It is telling you how people in the vernacular speak, or what is the common man's terminology when he says Mahol and Arel. And the term Arel is used for a non-Jew, and a Mahol is used for a Jew, even though that may not be the halachic gender or designation of those individuals. The Baikos one says something interesting, that the proof is not from the beginning of the mission over there, but later on in the Mishnah in the Darim brings a proof from the Psukim that non-Jews are called Arelim, even if they have Milah, and vice versa. And what the Baalei Tosafot say is that we only say Lashon B'nei Adam when there's a clear definition amongst the vernacular. If there is no clear definition amongst the vernacular, we go to the Psukim to define it for us. And what the Mishnah in the Darim says is that the Psukim define Mahol and Arel in that manner. That Arel is a reference to non-Jews, irrespective of whether they have Milah or not. And Mahol refers to Jews, irrespective of whether they have a Milah or not. And that's why the Gemara is bringing the Mishnah Nedarim. Not because of the Mishnah itself, but because the proof the Mishnah brings to its position from Sukkim, which tells you that that's a Havdara of the Torah. And even though normally Nedarim follow Lashon B'nai Adam, where it's ambiguous in Lashon B'nai Adam, then we lean on the Torah's definition of the words, and the Torah gives definition there in that manner. And that's why it's a proof of the year. Ella, Ika Benayu Israel Shemetu Achav Machmat Milah. That the Nafkamina to him is a Jew whose brother passed away, or he had two brothers actually who passed away from having a brit Milah. We don't insist that he gets a Milah, Velo Malu, and therefore he didn't get a Milah. Lamanda Amar, Vatat Bitit Yishmar Ika. According to what Atat Bitit Yishmar Ika, he can do it because he's a Jew, and therefore he can perform the mitzvah. Mandamar himo himo, anybody who has a milah has the right to give a milah. He doesn't have a milah, so he doesn't have leka. He can't give it. He's not able to give it. Well, the mandamar himo himo leka, is it really true that he doesn't allow a Jew without a milah to give a brit milah? That's not the other half of the Mishnah in the Darim. Koneim shani ne'eneh mimulim. Person who says that I am restricting myself from getting any benefit from someone who has a milah. Asur ba'aret le'Yisrael, umutar b'mulei obdei kochavim. He's not allowed to get benefit from any Jew. He's allowed to get benefit from any non-Jew, irrespective of whether they do or don't have a milah. So the term milah has a broader meaning than simply someone who is mahol. It means a Jew. And an arel, again, or enu mahol, doesn't matter whether the goy has a milah or not, he's still called an enu mahol. Ama avgab delo mehile, kamat mehile damu. That even though they don't have a brit, a Jew, he still considers as if he has a milah. Tosfot over here asks, why don't they say the nafkamino between the two is someone who's a mumar for brit milah? Because the one who says that atai briti tishmor leka, he's not part of the brit because he refuses to keep the brit. According to one who imo imo, he's a Jew. Therefore he should be shayach to imo imo. Tosfot answers, Romari, the mumar la relot miu bar shmirat brito elosheno chafetz. He's considered to be someone who's relevant to the brit and the covenant of Abraham, he just chooses not to keep it. But that doesn't preclude him from being a member of the Brit, or given the ability then to perform Brit Milah. They were going to both opinions, they would be kasher to perform a Milah. Ela'ika b'inayu isha. The nafkamina between them is a woman. According to what it says, atai briti tishmor, only someone who is shayach to the mitzvah of Milah
has the right to perform the mitzvah milah. If an isha is not the one shayechet in the mitzvah milah, then she doesn't have the right to perform the milah. Svatat v'jit ishmor precludes the woman from engaging to being the one who performs the milah. Madamar imo imo, ika. According to one who says imo imo, she is included. Disha commanded mehilo damyo. Because a woman is considered as if she has a milah. Now that could be in one of two ways. Either she has no orla. So since she has no orla, she's considered to be mahul by definition because she doesn't have an orla. Right, but the more mainstream view is, just like we said before, that the woman is included in the Brit of Abraham. And so she is considered to be as if she's mahul, not because she has anything that's associated with milah, but just because she's part of the Jewish nation. And anybody in the Jewish nation is considered to be mahul, like we said in the Mishnah before. If you're a Jew, then you're considered, or you're as if you are, mahul. And that's the status of the woman. And the Rav Chaim Mibrisk, the Chakira here, which tries to explain the difference between the Shitot and Isha, or La by a Jew, is something that's only generated by the necessity to have a Brit Milah. If you're not obligated in a Brit Milah, you don't have an Urla. And in that way, both someone who had brothers that passed away from Milah, who doesn't have to get a Milah, he's not called an Arel, because of the fact that he has no obligation in Milah, therefore he's not an Arel. And similarly, a woman doesn't have any din of Urla, she's not considered an Arel, because of the fact that she has no mitzvah of milah. And in that sense, she can be himo imo. Both individuals are considered mulim, and therefore they can give brit milah, according to that dayah. On the other hand, when it comes to hatafat dam brit, which is also a requirement of milah, over there, the woman does have a mitzvah of hatafat dam brit, but she is ketura. In that sense, she is not shayechet the mitzvah milah, and for that reason, batai britit tishmor precludes the woman. So the woman would be included if it has to do with her designation as being a mahul or not having an orla. On the other hand, when it comes to her relevance to the mitzvah by atat b'tit tishmor, there we will preclude her because her exclusion from atafat b'mbrit is because she's tura from atafat b'mbrit. And that could also be used to explain the necessity for the preclusion in the Gemara in Kiddushin, which is the Gemara in Kiddushin is saying that she is ptura from hatafat dam brit. And that Gemara in Kiddushin is what makes it that she's not relevant to the mitzvah, and that's why she's precluded over here according to atai pritit tishmor. Now then, so the Bali Tosafot explains why the Gemara in Kiddushin needs a miut for Isha, she'eno chevet lamul b'na. Even though she can't perform the milah, the miut in Kiddushin is coming to tell you that she's not even obligated to see that her child gets a milah. Not only that she can't do it, she's not even the obligated party to ensure, and it's only the father that has the obligation to ensure the child gets a milah, and that's how he does it with the miut in Kiddushin. Mar says, Umi kaman damar isha lo? How could it be that there's anybody who thinks that a woman is disqualified? So then, what are you going to say about v'tikaktiv, v'tikach tziporatzor? What are you going to do about Tzipora who gave a brit milah to Eliezer on their way to Mitzrayim in the Malon? Mar says, karibe v'takach. Don't read it that she's vitikach, that she took it, but rather vitakach, she instructed someone else to give the brit. Vaktiv vatichrot. It also says there that she cut. Not only did she take the sharp stone, but she cut. Koribei vatachrit. Damrelini shachrina vavod. That not that she cut it, but she instructed or made sure, ensured that it was cut. She told someone else or instructed someone else and they did it. Vibaitema achei vatchala. Others suggest that she started the Brit Milah, Vata Moshe Va'agmira, and then Moshe came along and finished it off. So that she only began the process, then the Nachash released Moshe Rabbeinu, and then he was able to finish up the Brit Milah once she had begun the process. The other one is that she asked someone else to do it, which would be interesting, because who else was she asking to do it? That means that it was a Goy, which would mean that you would have to believe that a Goy is kosher in the Milah. Over here, the Balei Tosafot note that there is a major machloket here, as to whether a woman is kshera the milah or not. Bali Tosafot say over here, yesh lifsok kirav, vein isha kshera lamu. Either paskin like Rav, who disqualifies from the posuk of atai britit tishmor, which would mean that the woman is disqualified from giving a milah. Ta'af agav to Rav v'Rabbi Yochanan halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan. Generally, when we have a makhluk Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is the one who learns it out of himo. So he doesn't have a problem, because he says that whoever has a milah, or is deemed to have a milah, can give a milah. According to him, a woman could give a milah, and then he doesn't have to explain the problem with Tzipora. Rav, who says, Vatai Pritit Tishmor, has to explain the problem by Tzipora. And then we give the answer of the Gemara.
So now you have machok rav and Rabbi Yochanan. The halach is like Rabbi Yochanan, means an isha would be ksheira. Baha halachu kirav. Over here, the halach is like rav. The brighter, the Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, kaima kovate. Because Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the bright that we brought, who are Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, invokes the pasuk of atad briti tishmor to disqualify the oved kochavim. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rav are in the same shita. So even though normally Rabbi Yochanan would trump Rav, over here Rav has the backing of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, which gives it more clout in this situation. And then we're going to pass him like Rav, that atad briti tishmor is the source, which would disqualify a woman. Now, that also is a problem, because then it also disqualifies an oved kochavim as well. And then who exactly was Tzipora instructing over here to do the Brit Milah? But leaving that aside, he paskins like Rav. On the other hand, he says, Babag pasak tishak kshira lamul. The Bahag, Baal Alachut Gedolot, paskin like Rabbi Yochanan, and says that a woman is kshira lamul. So that's a major machloket that then actually permeates down into the poskei halacha, which is whether an isha is kshira lamul, whether she can give a Milah. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch paskin like Rabbi Yochanan over here, and suggests that an isha is kshira lamul. Again, generally we dissuade it, but that maybe b'diavad it would be k'sheira. Whereas the Ramah says, Yeshomim shisha lo tamul, which is like the Balei HaTosafot over here, who say that the Braita supports Rav's position, and therefore the Halacha should be like Rav in this situation. All right, next Mishnah. Mitrapim en ripui mamon. One is allowed to get a monetary cure from them, aval lo ripui nefashot, but not something that involves nefashot. Mishnah is ambiguous about the terms here because it just says nevashot and mamon that the Gemara is going to deal with right away. You're not allowed to get a haircut from them in any place, Rabbi Meir says. In their day, they gave haircuts using razors, and the problem was that he might just slip across your throat in the meantime and kill you. It's out in a public venue, then it's mutar, because then you have witnesses to everything that's going on. Aval lo beino le beino. But in a private setting, that would not be allowed because there we can't trust the Oved Kochavim and you don't have witnesses because it's in a secluded area. So in that case, they agree with Rabbi Meir. All right, so now, my ripui mamon or my ripui nefashot. What does the Mishnah mean when it says ripui mamon or ripui nefashot? Ilei my ripui mamon bischar. Ripui mamon means that he compensated him, that you're allowed to do. As Rashi explains over here, he doesn't want to lose his money. And therefore, he's going to do the right thing because he wants to get paid for his services. Ripui nefashot b'chinam, getting medical attention for free is problematic. And Rashi over here says that the word nefashot can be translated as to mean by their own will, which is matzmo. U'menafsho ose kamo imyesh et nafshechem. That if you see fit to do so, b'datchem, means that of your own volition, of your own will. So you see the word nefesh is used in that context. And so maybe it means over here doing it for free. Then, litnei mitrapim et b'skar v'lo b'chinam. Where it says you had much easier language you could have used in the Mishnah if you wanted to say for free and for compensation, then just write it that way. Write it that you can do it if you pay, can't do it for free. Ela ripui mamon, davar she'ein bo sakana. Ripui nefashot, davar she'esh bo sakana. So ripui mamon now means something that is not life-threatening, which is that even if there's something goes wrong with it, you could just pay more money and get it cured. So that's what it means, ripui mamon, to just pay money and you can take care of the problem. Ripui nefashot is something where there is life-endangering sickness. There, you're not allowed to seek medical attention from them because our fear is that he will help along the sickness or he really won't cure you and it will cause your death. V'amar Rabbi Yehuda, afilu rivdak huslaita lo matzinan minayu. Doesn't Rabbi Yehuda say that even when it comes to the scab from the bloodletter on the back of the individual, if he's in pain from that scab, that you shouldn't seek medical attention from an Oved Kochavim? There it's clearly not about a life-threatening issue. It's simply that he's in a little bit of a pain. And Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to seek their medical attention. Well, others explain it simply means you're not allowed to have bloodletting done by them. That will become more relevant later on at the end of today's daf with regards to the Shita at Tosafot. Ela ripui mamon behemto. Ripui mamon means you're allowed to use them as a veterinarian. They can take care of your animals. Ripui nefashot gufei. But it means that your body. You're not allowed to seek medical attention from him when it comes to your body. Vainu dama Rav Yehuda, and then that's supportive of Rav Yehuda's contention. Even when it comes to bloodletting, we don't allow you to go and seek medical attention from the scab from the bloodletting, which is a little bit of pain. We don't allow you to seek medical attention from them. Now, the Balei Tosafot will come back later and try to redefine this. So I'm not going to do that, but just know now, the way Rashi reads this is that Rabbi Yehuda
basically says that you can't seek medical attention from them whatsoever. And that means across the board. There's never a time when you're allowed to do that. And later on, when we find Amoraim that disagree with that, he's going to say they argue on Rabbi Yehuda's contention over here. But we're explaining the Mishnah now that you can not seek medical attention from an Ovei Kochavim whatsoever. You can seek medical attention for your animals from a goy, or you can get a veterinarian who's a goy. And that is because, again, the fear is that this person will do something to your detriment. And that's why we don't want you seeking medical attention from the individual. Amar Rav Chisla, Amar Rav Ukva, Aval. Imamar lo sam ploni yafelo, sam ploni ralo mutar. If he's getting advice in terms of which medicine or which salve will help out this situation, if he says this one's good, this one is not good, then you can listen to him, or you can seek his counsel even in these situations, get his opinion. Kasavar shu'ule mashulo, keichi de mashulo, mashulo ish yachrino. The fact that he's seeking my counsel means that he's not just getting my opinion, he's going to get a second opinion and a third opinion. And then I'm going to have a problem because and now I'm taking a risk that I'll ruin my reputation. So over there he's going to speak the truth because you have a way to verify the information that he's giving you. You're going to seek other people's counsel the way you seek his counsel, and therefore he's not going to take the risk of saying the wrong thing over here. When he's providing the medical attention, over there you can't tell what he's doing. Or it might be too late at that point in time, and that's why we will not allow you to seek his medical attention in those situations. Amar Rav, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rami Lamar Rav Chisam Rabbi Yochanan, Safek Chai, Safek Mate, Emit Rabbi Meh. If there's a situation or a circumstance where the individual is ill, but there is questions as to the probability of whether it's life-threatening or not, he might survive from it, he might not survive from it. In that case, you may not seek their medical attention. But thy mate, if he for certain will pass away, mitrapimeh, then you can seek their medical attention. Because in that situation, you're going to die anyway. So what's the risk of seeking their attention? There's a plausible possibility or a probability, however remote, that he might actually cure whatever sickness this is. So then you have upside. If he, on the other hand, does something that's to the detriment, the guy's dying anyway. There's a high or almost 100% probability he's going to die anyway. So if this guy accelerates his death, what's the big deal? You may as well take the risk. In situations where he has a 50-50 shot of living or dying, then you're taking a much bigger risk. If he did nothing, he might survive. If you go to the goy, now you've increased the probability that he's going to die because we think that he's looking out for the detriment of the individual. So he says you can't seek medical attention in the case where it's certain death. The Gemara asked a very obvious question, mate, ha'ika chayesho. What do you mean? There is the problem of that there is temporary life. Or there is a duration of life that still exists. My answer is the chayisha aloha shinan. We don't worry about a short duration of life, which is a very problematic statement, because in other places in Shas we say that we are worried about chayisha, and we do a lot of things for chayisha, including being mechalo Shabbat. We're allowed to, as Tosafot points out, you're allowed to remove or empty out stones and do things that are mechalo Shabbat to save someone under the pile, even if they're going to die anyway, but they're going to survive slightly longer. We allow you to be Mechalel Shabbat for any medical attention to save someone's life, not permanently, just to save them for 2 hours or 3 hours. So how are we here? Can you say we ignore Chaye Sha'ah and say that we don't worry about the fact that he's going to die a day earlier or 2 days earlier if we let him get medical attention from the goy versus just dying if we just leave him alone and passively don't intervene in this situation? So the Baal Yitzchak says something very interesting over here. The Chazal instituted with regards to Chaye Sha'ah always for the benefit of the person who is sick. That means that in either case, we leave the vadai to do the safek, which is that in the case by Shabbat, it's for the benefit of the person that we are mechalo Shabbat to give him the chayisha. So over there, since it's the benefit of the individual, we assume the chayisha are considered to be chayola, and they're mechalo Shabbat. Over here, where the chayisha would be to his detriment, because then he won't get the medical attention. Over there, we're going to say chayisha don't matter, and he'll give him the medical attention. So what he's saying is that Chazal, in either case, viewed chayisha in the context to have positive meaning for the individual involved. In a case where it's to save his life, then we'll consider chayisha chayolam. In a case where it could be lose his life, because it will consider chayisha not to be meaningful, and we'll give him the benefit in both cases. It's unbelievable statement. But in both cases, we deem the safek to the benefit of the choleh. One case, allowing him to risk chayisha, and the other one, to preserve chayisha, which is interesting only because if you're allowing for chilul Shabbat, you have to really believe that chayisha is valuable in that case, valuable enough that you could be Michal Shabbat. If that's the case, then the definition of Chayishah means Chayim. And then over here, how do you allow him to go the other way? The answer is that must be a Safek in Chayishah. In both cases, we're Machmir, but Machmir the Tzad of the victim or the person who is ill. The Baal Tosafot is basically saying what you're saying in other words, which is, if we have a Safek, we have to look at what's the alternative for the person who is involved in the situation. What you're pointing out is that one case is the risk you're taking for Chayei Olam versus Chayei Shah, that's worth the risk. By Shabbat, the only alternative is death immediately versus Chayei Shah. So in that comparison, Chayei Shah is worth a lot more. And I think that's basically what the Baal Tosafot and Nehemiah are saying. And how can I prove to you that we don't worry about extending life for short durations? Diftiv. Imamarnu, Navoahir, Vaharav. Ba'ir Vamadnu Sham. If we decide to go into the city and throw ourselves to the city is in famine, it's under siege, and we're gonna die there anyway. And then the Arba Mitzoraim, which is the Torah for Pashat Mitzorah, we say that the Arba Mitzoraim are trying to make a decision. They're outside the city in the Shomron. The city is being laid siege to by Aram at the time. And now they have to make a choice. They are starving to death outside the walls of the city because they are Mitzorim. They're not allowed into the city. Meantime, they can try to go to the city, but the people in the city are in no better situation. They're under siege and they have nothing to eat. So they make a decision. We're going to throw ourselves to the people of Aram. And they make a decision which says, if they take care of us and we eat, we'll survive. If they don't, they're going to kill us. We're going to die anyway from the Ra'av. Well, what about Vayikra Chayisha? What about the fact that they were giving up their lives? Meaning that if they starved, they would have lived a little longer. They go to Aram and they kill them right away. They're giving up a Chayisha. Elav the Chayisha lo Chashinan. In that case, we don't worry about Chayisha. What's interesting about the situation, it's not all clear that these Arba Mitzoraim were making any halachic decision. It's very hard to argue that you can prove something halachically from these psukim, especially since Chazal believed that the Arba Mitzoraim were Gehazi and his children. And that could fall one of two ways. You could say that Gehazi was well-versed in halacha because he was the misharet of Elisha until he was cursed, and therefore he knew and he made a halachic decision. Or you could say that Gehazi was Paragol. So that's what landed him in this position. And therefore, why could you rely on him for a halachic dispensation? So it's interesting that the Gemara brings a proof from Arba Mitzoraim in the Sorum Shomron, where it's not even clear that they're halachically motivated. But nevertheless, they say from there, you can see Chayei Sha'ar worth risking for Chayei Olam. Right, the Gemara says now, Meitavei, lo yisav yiten adam im aminim. Person cannot interact with the minim. Now, the Baal Tosafot point out over here does not mean you can't have commercial ties, or you can't interact with them at all, but rather it means that you lo yamshich o la'arich imam. You shouldn't spend a lot of time with them. You shouldn't do it for a long duration. If you have to interact, you make it a quick interaction, that's it. You shouldn't get into any friendly conversations with them. Vein mitrapim em, afilu chai sha'ah. And you're not allowed to get medical attention for them, even if it's to save a life momentarily, to give them an extension of life. So now, this would seemingly disagree with what we just saw before, that you're allowed to give yourself over to the Obi Kochavim by Sekanat Nefashot, where there's only Chayisha, that you're allowed to engage the Obi Kochavim to bring a cure, because it might save your life. We were saying, even for Chayisha, we won't allow you to engage with a Min. And so the Gemara here seemingly thinks that there's a steer between them. What will come out is obviously that Minim are different then Ovdei Kochavim, but then you'd have to also define a Min, and we'll get to that later in the Gemara. We'll see that maybe, as we've noted before, that the Min or the Minim of the Gemara are associated with the early Christians, and we'll see that the Baalei Tosafot and other things point to that in this situation. There was an instant or a case where Ben Dama, who was the nephew of Rabbi Shmuel, also is Talmid Mufak, Shikochol Nachash, he was bitten by a venomous snake, Uva Yaakov Ish Kvar Tzchanya, the Rapoto. And then Yaakov Ish Kvar Tzchanya came to provide him a cure. Velo henicho Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel refused the medical attention from Yaakov Ish Kvar Tzchanya. Again, we'll have to note what's unique about Ish Kvar Tzchanya, which we saw back on Yudzayin Amud Aleph, and we'll discuss that in a moment. But Rabbi Shmuel refused the medical attention from him. Again, seemingly going against what the Gemara said before, that here he has a venomous snake bite that he's going to die from anyway. Why not let the individual provide a medical attention? Maybe there's an upside over here. Maybe he'll actually save his life. Let him do this. At least let me get cured from him. And I'll bring you a pasuk from the Torah that says that it's mutar for me to get a cure from him.
V'lo yispik ligmor et ha-davar ad sheyatzta nishmato. Umeit, he didn't get a chance to finish, and he passed away from the venomous snake bite. Karo lav Rav Yishmael ashrecha ben dama. Rav Yishmael said about ben dama, lucky are you, or praised be you, shegufcha tohor, that your body is tohor, v'yatzta nishmatcha b'tahara, and that your neshama left b'tahara. V'lo avarta al divrei chavarecha, and you did not violate the word of your peers, shayu omrim, because we say, uporeitz geder yishachenu nachash, that a person who breaks down fences should be bitten by a snake, and that the Chazal take to mean someone who violates Yisurei Dirabanan. So Rashi over here explains, what does it mean, yatzah nishmato b'tahara? He explains it in a similar way that we have in the Asara Harugei Malchut, that yatzah nishmato b'tahara means the last word that he pronounced was something b'tahara, and Rashi says over here, the last word he said was mutar. And so that yatzah nishmato b'mutar, that was the greatness of him, because mutar is a word that is positive, in the sense that you are allowed or you are permitted, and he passed away on that word. Others just simply say that what it means you passed away b'tahara is that you passed away passively without intervening and not actively violating the divrei chachamim. And that's what it means, he passed away b'tahara, that he didn't violate the word of the chachamim in order to survive the situation over here. My answer is, shiny minut, dimashcha da'ate mimshach batrayu. Minut is different than an ovei kochavim because you can be drawn after it. So in a case, we will allow you to take the risk in Chayei Sha'ah to get a Chayei Olam, and we don't worry about the Chayei Sha'ah, and we'll take that risk. By a Min, we will not allow you to do that, and we won't allow you to take the risk with the Min, because there's too much risk that even if he gets Chayei Olam, he won't end up living a Chayei Olam as a Jew, he'll end up living a Chayei Olam as a Min, because there's such a pull and attraction to the Minut over here. Now, the Balei HaTosafot are significantly bothered by the case over here, that how could it be that Rabbi Shmuel denied his nephew the ability to survive because of this risk about a min or a possibility that you'll be caught by a min, or even how did the Chachamim prevent someone from getting this type of medicinal tension? So he says over here, the Chor Mashma, Dafil mirofe mumche, shimit rabim mehem mikom akom, min aminim asur litparlem shum choli. That here it seems to be that this restriction applies even to an expert rofe, that you don't have a right to go and get a cure from them. Which would be strange, because if you think the problem with Ovei Kochavim is that he might kill the individual. Over here there's a different problem, which is that we might think he'd be attracted to them. So now, Balei HaTosafot are bothered by the Gemara coming up on Chavchet, tomorrow's daf, where we see that Rabbi Yebou got a cure from Yaakov Mino. So how could it be that Rabbi Yebou sought attention from Yaakov Mino when over here Rabbi Shmuel denied that to his nephew Ben Dama? So now, if you remember back on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, Yaakov Ish Kfar Tzchanya made an appearance on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. That was in the case where Rabbi Eliezer was nitpas the minut. Rabbi Eliezer was taken out and accused of being a min. And then afterwards he was released. And then he's upset about the whole situation. And Rabbi Akiva says, Rabbi, let me tell you something that I know from you. And he says, yes, please, what was it? And he said, you told us that if you somehow did something positive or thought positively about a min, then you may be taken up on that charge. And then Rabbi Eliezer remembers his story. And Amar lo Akiva, yiskartani pamachat hayiti melech bashuk elyon shel tzipori, matzati eched v'Yaakov ish kfar tzchanya shemo. That was the Yaakov Ish Kfar Tzchanya, who was a min. That's the version that we have in our Gemara. But the versions in the Gemarot that were not censored in the Kitfayat say, Im echad mi talmidei Yeshu anotzri, Yaakov Ish Kfar Tzchanya. And the drosha on the posuk was in the name of his Rebbe, Yeshu anotzri. The Balei Tosafot must have had that Kitfayat, and I'll show you now why. That is because they say now, V'yesh lomar, the only restriction in a min is not when you use an expert min, not when you use a min, but rather when he brings the cure in the name of his avoda zara. Uba Yaakov ish kfar tzchanya shamo lirapoto b'shem rabo. And ish Yaakov ish kfar tzchanya wanted to bring the cure in the name of his Rebbe. That's the girsa that we don't have back on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, which is that he said it over the name of his Rebbe, Yeshua Notzri. And here he wanted to provide a cure for Ben Dama using the name of Jesus. And that was going to be the cure that he was going to provide over here. So two things. First of all, that's more indicative of the fact that the min, or the word minim over here, refers to Christians, or early Christians.
as well as the Girsa and the Gemara back on Yudzayin Amud Aleph, the Bayit Tosafot are very supportive of that Girsa. So over here, Yaakov Ish Kres Kanya wants to give the cure in the name of his Rebbe, Yeshu, in the name of Jesus. And he says that you're not allowed to do. V'chein, v'mar rofe, afilu enu min, kach mimayim shalobda kuchavim plonit, o meitzim shalifnei avodah kodesh sur. So Bayit Tosafot would say that if a non-min rofe says, take those waters from the Avodah Zarah, take that tree from the Avodah Zarah, that'll bring you a cure, you're not allowed to do that. Because the Gemara Pesachim says, b'chol pintrapim chutz me'atzei asherah. It's one of the things you have to give up your life for. You're not allowed to use Avodah Zarah to provide yourself a cure. So here the Bayit Tosafot both narrow the scope, but also expand the scope, which says, the scope is narrowed by minim. If they're doing it in the shame of their minut, meaning that they're curing you through their religious practice or through the name of their God or the name of their Rebbe, that's problematic because the person who's cured then is, of course, going to be thankful that this person does it, and they'll be very drawn towards this religion. You can understand what the problem is. If he cures him with the name of his Rebbe, then afterwards, what do you think this person's going to do? Of course, he's going to follow that individual. That's why we don't allow it. Same thing, then he expands it to say that applies to Ovdei Kuchavim as well. So again, it's the Gemara in Pesachim, that you're not allowed to get any benefit and medical attention or cure from Avodah Zarah. And therefore, the doctor says, bring me from that water of Avodah Zarah. Bring me from that water those trees of Avodah Zarah. You're not allowed to take the cure. Aval, she'enu to'elet, behen yoter me'achirim. He doesn't assign or attribute any value or powers to these items beyond just needing water or trees, that would be fine. Well, what the Bayit Tosafot do say is, if the doctor says, bring me water, bring me a tzim, and he doesn't define what it is, then you can even bring the water of the Avodah Zarah or the trees of the Avodah Zarah. So over there, it's clear that he doesn't care about the Avodah Zarah. He's not using qua Avodah Zarah to provide the cure. He's using it because it's mayim or because it's etzim. And in that case, you can bring it to him. That's a big both. Again, narrowing of the scope that Bayit Tosafot, expanding it to include nachrim, not just minim, but also then giving the opportunity, if they're not doing it, b'shem Avodah Zarah, that you can't get cured from them. And so now the Gemara says, Amar Mar, Lo avarta divrei chaverecha, sheyomrim uforetz geder yishachenu nachash. Gemara now wants to investigate what was Rabbi Shmuel's thought process over here. Rabbi Shmuel says to him, listen, you're better off now because you didn't violate the words of your friends, and if you had violated the words of your friends, you would have been bitten by a snake. So, iunami chaviatarke. What was the benefit? He already was bitten by a snake, so why not take the chance of violating the words of the chachamim? And then worse, he'll be bitten by a snake as well. Well, how much worse was he if he violated the word of the Chachamim? Now he's going to die from a snake bite. If he doesn't follow the words of the Chachamim, he'll get a snake bite. So what was his downside in violating the words of the Chachamim? The answer is, that a snake bite of the violation of the word of the Rabbanan does not have a cure. So Rashi sees the question over here is simply, what does it make a difference if he gets bitten by a nachash, if he violates the word of the Chachamim? Just like he got a cure from the first bite of the nachash, he'll get a cure from the second bite of the nachash. That the Gemara answers that the bite of the nachash of the Chachamim has no cure to it, and that's why it would be problematic. The Tosfot ask about that explanation, but why does it make a difference? Because he's going to die either way, so why not take the risk, and maybe you'll get bitten by the snake of the Chachamim or not, and if you do, you've gained yourself some time in between. So the answer the Bayit Tosafot will give is that better to die in a passive situation where you have not violated the words of the Chachamim versus actively violating the words of the Chachamim, getting bitten by a snake and dying anyway. So if you're going to die either way, you're better off dying in a state where you haven't violated the words of the Chachamim, and that's the answer of the Gemara. And so that's why it's better to remain in the passive position and not take up the cure and get chayish sha'ab, only to die again later on from a snake bite, because we'd rather that you die in innocence rather than violate the word of the Chachamim. The Gemara says, Uma havilei lemeimar. Ben Dama said that he had a pasuk from the Torah to support his position. So what was that pasuk? V'chai behem v'lo shimot behem. The pasuk that's always quoted by the Gemara and Chazal, that you have an obligation to live by the mitzvot and not to die by the mitzvot. That means that no mitzvah can cause you to lose your life. So over here he invoked that principle. He says, "V'chai b'hem, I'm allowed to live, so I should be able to do it." That's only true when it's in the privacy of your home. But if it's out in the public,
That is not true. The Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Minayin Shem Omrim Lo Ladam Avod Avodat Kochavim Al Tehareg, worship Avodah Zarah, not die. She Avod Ve'al Yehareg. He should worship the Avodah Zarah, not die. Tamal Omer, V'chai V'hem, V'lo Shimot V'hem. Pasuk says, you have to live by the mitzvot, not die by the mitzvot. Yochol Afilu B'Faresia, you would think the din is true even in public. Tamal Omer, V'lo Techalalu, Et Shem Kodshi. That you cannot profane my holy name. So over here, Rabbi Shmuel's Shita is different than that what we saw of the Chachamim. In Perek Ben Sorer Umoher, Rabbi Shmuel believes that any mitzvah violated in public is a Chilul Hashem, and there is no dispensation for that because there is an overarching principle, which is Lo Techalulu Et Shem Kodshi. You violate a mitzvah in public, Rashi over here says that, Yesh Chilul Hashem Sheyotzei L'chutz V'Le Midim Imenu L'Chalel B'Kedushat Hashem, that there's a Chilul Hashem because other people will learn from you how to do this or how to act, and therefore there's a Chilul Hashem from this that you cause to other people. Others suggest that the Chilul Hashem over here is simply that you are worshipping Avodah Zarah instead of believing in Hashem, that you've now acquiesced and given your allegiance to the Avodah Zarah, and that's not allowed in public. Rabbi Shmuel believes that any mitzvah, not just the Avodah Zarah, not just the three cardinal sins, any mitzvah that is violated in public is a Yehareg Ve'al Yavor. You have to give up your life. Any mitzvah B'tzina, even the three cardinal sins, is a Yavor Ve'al Yehareg. You have to violate it and not give up your life. So he has no differentiation in mitzvot. His only distinction is public and private. In public, Asur, private, Mutar, meaning that you can violate any mitzvah in private, you cannot violate any mitzvah in public. So now, Ben Dama over here had a problem. Here was a case where we have to suggest, as the Baal Tosfos do, that it was Befahesia, it was out in public, and people knew about it. Because of that, he didn't allow him to get the ripoy from the Oved Kochavim, because it would have been in Chilul Hashem, or if it was done in public. So even though it was only a violation of a Din D'Rabbanan, Rabbi Shmuel felt that that Befahesia was a Chilul Hashem, and therefore it was a violation of the Din D'Oraita of Lo Techalalu. And that overrides the V'chai Bahem over here, and therefore you would have to give up your life, and that's what he concluded also. Now, even according to the Chachamim, if it was Avodah Zarah, then you would not be allowed to use it to be mitrapeh by it. Whether it's Bitsina, whether it's Bevehesia, you don't have a right to use Avodah Zarah in your benefit, whether that means death to save your life, or to use it medicinally, you couldn't do it. Rabbi Shmuel, if it was in private, he would allow it. He would say that's fine if it was Avodah Zarah, because you can do it. The Chachamim say it doesn't matter public or private, it's the three cardinal sins that matter. And the three cardinal sins, you have to give up your life, whether in public or in private. And that means for the Chachamim, the three cardinal sins, there is a requirement to give up your life, even Bitsina. And then for Hesia, there is a broader requirement to give up one's life, because of Kiddush Hashem. That would apply more broadly to even mitzvot outside of the three cardinal sins. And then there's also the Gzeirat Hashmad, by where you would have to give up your life for any violation in Gzeirat Hashmad. Then the Baal Tosfos write one little line at the end, which they take as simply, but as very controversial line, the Baal Tosfos say over here. It says, V'imratza lachmir l'atzmo afilu b'shar mitzvot rashai, k'mo Rabbi Avar bar Zimra. It says, if you want to be machmir, and give up your life for other mitzvot, and refuse to acquiesce to whatever violation the goy is forcing you to do, you can take that on your own, and you can give up your life for any mitzvah in the Torah. So even though you're only obligated for the three cardinal sins, you can opt in. There's a mitzvah kumit, in a sense, that if you give up your life at Kiddush Hashem, in places where you're not obligated to do it. And he brings a case from the Yushalmi, where one of the Amoraim was machmir on himself, gave up his life not to eat nevela, which is not one of the three cardinal sins. And you see here that you have a right to give up your life. The Rambam in Mishneh Torah says, anybody who gives up their life in a situation in which they're not obligated to, it's kilu shofech damin. It's as if he's killing himself. There's no obligation to do it. It says you don't have a right to give up your life in those situations, and you have to violate it. So here the Baal Tosfos say you can opt in and make a choice. The Rambam takes a very strong stand against this. It says you're not allowed to give up your life in these cases, and you have to violate the mitzvah, and the Torah compels you to do that, and that's the requirement. You can't make an option to do it any other way. All right, now the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Chana Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Makeh Shmechalalin Aleh Ata Shabbat Ein Mitrapim Mehen. Any wound that you would be Mechalel Shabbat for, which means that it is something that is Sakanat Nefashot,
So that you cannot get cure or medical attention from the Ovi Kuchavim about it. Vigadamre, Amar Rabba Barchan, Rabbi Yochanan, Komaka Shel Chalal, Ein Mitzvah Bimeh. Any wound that is in the core of the body over here, you have a cloak at Rashi and Tosfot. Rashi says, Chalal is Bichalal Gufal. That means it seems to be like some internal wound in the Chalal Guf. That's the way Rashi describes it, Bichalal Gufal. The Bayit Tosfot don't say that's connected Chalal Guf. It doesn't have to necessarily be in the cavity of the body, or internally, it has to be around that area where the main cavity of the body is and the internal organs are. And Tosfot proves that because of what the Yerushalmi says, kol shul min chalal velifnim. So that makes it sound like chalal does not mean an internal wound, it just means in the central part of the body, and then anything in that central part of the body, and internally, meaning going inward from there, it would be problematic. So it's not necessarily like Rashi says it's an internal wound. It can be an external wound, but it has to be a wound that is around the area of the central part of the body, not the extremities. But you have these two lishonot that say that you're not allowed to seek medical attention from the Ovi Kuchavim. In one case, for something you'd be mechalal Shabbat, and the other case, something that was a makat chalal. Ma benayu, what's the nafkamina between these two lishonot? Ike benayu, gav hayad, the gav haregel. The difference between them will be the back of the hand and the back of the foot, meaning that the top of your hand and the top of your foot, side opposite the palm, and the other side, the opposite flat of your foot. So that's a difference between them, because the Gabe Shabbat, we are Mechalel Shabbat for a Makah that is a Gaba Yad. But that is not a Makat Chalal. So according to the one who says that you're not allowed to seek medical attention from them for Makat Chalal, would permit you to seek attention for Gaba Yad and Gaba Rego. The one who says that it's about Chilul Shabbat, we would be Mechalel Shabbat on that item, and therefore you could not seek attention about them. And Rashi goes on to explain that the reason you can get medical attention from them is because it's a visible part of your body. And if he puts any salve or any item on there, you can watch it. If you see it's going poorly or it's to your detriment, you can wipe it off or you can remove it. So first of all, it's in a location that generally is not of a fatal nature. And number two is you have visibility as to what he's doing because it's external and you can watch it all the time. Since you see it or watch it all the time, you can intervene to stop it if he does something detrimental. And that's why they would allow it. So yes, in this case, it might lead to Sakanat Nefashot, and that's why you can't be Mechalel Shabbat. But with regards to Gavayat, Gavaregel, those are external wounds. And therefore, they're not part of Chalal Guf. And according to that sheet, though, you wouldn't be able to seek treatment from them. Again, because you can't supervise that issue. Now Rashi over here, the last line of Rashi on the Amud Bet says, the late Rav Yehuda. Rabbi Yochanan argues on Rabbi Yehuda. This is what I said to you before. Rashi's explanation of Rabbi Yehuda is that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow you to seek medical attention from them whatsoever. And over here, Rabbi Yochanan says only if it are sakanat nefashot, they are life-threatening wounds, then you cannot seek their attention. Implying that if it's not life-threatening, you could seek their attention. And Rashi says that argues on Rabbi Yehuda by the Mishnah. So the Baal Yad Tosafot don't like that explanation because they say that nobody argues on Rabbi Yehuda. First of all, why doesn't the Gemara bring up the fact that Rabbi Yochanan now would be problematic in the explanation of the Mishnah? Because we explained the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now all of a sudden Rabbi Yochanan would undermine that explanation. How's Rabbi Yochanan going to explain the Mishnah? They're going to say, Hanichal the Rabbi Yehuda. Allah Rabbi Yochanan, how does he explain the Mishnah now? The Gemara never does that. So the Baal Yad Tosafot, in the name of the Rabbeinu Tam, explain over here that there are actually three different categories. There's a category of a life-threatening wound or life-threatening illness. There's an illness that is not life-threatening, and then there is a bari, someone who is healthy. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehuda are speaking about two different issues. Rabbi Yochanan is speaking about someone who's a chole, someone who's ill or sick. So someone who is sick or ill, if it's a life-threatening item, we don't allow you to seek their medical attention. Because by the case of sakana, it's lower in mari nafshayu. It won't discredit him. Kim yamut, tematzin ishtemut, tamar misukanaya. The reason he died was because he was definitely ill. And that's what caused the death. If it's non-life-threatening, we do allow you to seek their medical attention. Because when you're dealing with a cholesh embo sakana, then he will definitely not kill him. Because he can't slip out of that. Because if a person dies, that will ruin his reputation completely. But that end, what Rabbi Yehuda says is if a person's healthy, you may not seek medical attention from them in that case. Because Rita Kuslaita is just that he has a scab that's hurting him on his back. He's otherwise healthy. He's totally fine. In that case, you can't seek medical attention because all you're doing is trying to get some pain relief or some little cure, Meantime, he could send you into a spiral that will leave you sick and in a terrible situation. The person is bari completely, and then he treats him, and that treatment then causes him to die. People will not say that he's a bad doctor. The people will say that he had an issue with this individual, and he wanted to take revenge, and he killed him, because there's no reason that a little scab like that should result in someone dying from the treatment. And it's clear that he intentionally did it to kill him because he had some fight to pick with this individual. Therefore, he doesn't worry about his reputation. That's why you can't go to him as a healthy individual. So what he says is that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehuda are addressing different issues. Rabbi Yehuda is addressing a bari, and Rabbi Yochanan is addressing a chole. And so Rabbi Yochanan says, by chole, if it is life-threatening, no go. If it's not life-threatening, it's okay. And even Rabbi Yehuda would agree to that. Bari, everybody agrees, you may not seek their medical attention. And that way he takes away the stira between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan and disagrees with Rashi's interpretation over here. On the other hand, the Ramban makes a distinction, which is that anything that is connected to sakana has sakana, even though it doesn't present itself now as sakana. And that is that any treatment that could result in something that would be deathly ill, that type of treatment is not allowed up front, even though you're not deathly ill at the time that you're seeking the treatment. So since it can result or end up in a situation of deathly illness, then you're not allowed to seek treatment from him. Scab or the wound from the bloodletting is something that can lead to a problem of sakana, and therefore even when he's treating it and it's not sakana, we will treat it as if it's a sakana, and in that way you can square the position of Rabbi Yochanan with that of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda's case is a case where the chole could result in a sakana, and that's the same as Rabbi Yochanan saying that by sakana you can't get treatment from them. Tosfos does then at the end qualify his statement and say, b'chol she'amarnu asur b'bari b'chole, she'esh bo sakana. Everything we said that was restricted when it comes to a bari or a chole she'esh bo sakana, hanu b'rofe she'enu mumche. That's only that we don't have an expert doctor. Alva mumche mutar. When he's an expert doctor, everybody agrees then that he won't be maranafshe, and therefore he will be trusted and you can get medicinal attention from him. That's what it says. That's what we rely on. We get bloodlet by the non-Jews. Anybody who's involved in bloodletting is an expert, or it's a business that relies on reputation. And therefore, we can get services from them because they won't risk their reputation and their services and do something improper or cause something bad to happen to the customer. All right, we'll continue with this tomorrow, three lines down on the top of Chavchet, Amud Aleph.